Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is a very special one, one that we look forward to a couple times a month. It's the Thai Atlanta Special Edition, and we're going to get to learn more about the good work that Thai Atlanta is doing, and what's going on in your world, Mr. Stone?
All kinds of good stuff. As you know, we had my third or fourth birthday celebration. It is birthday month here for Stone, the Big 5-0, and we capped it off. I think that may be the culmination of ceremonies with the gift of the espresso machine and people coming from as far away as Pensacola, Florida to celebrate my birthday in the bar that my kids were raised in.
The awarding of the espresso machine is always an important moment in a person's life.
Right. So
it's a rite of passage.
It is. It is. So now I feel like I have the, you know, the silver crown of blessing. I've hit the 5-0 and we're off and moving. But I have been looking forward to this segment, as we always do. The Thai Atlanta special. We have three folks we're going to get a chance to visit with. Anitha, not even going to try to pronounce her last name, but we're going to visit with her in a little bit. And also William Howe. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio today, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the virtual CXO, Mr. Don Turner. Welcome to the show, man.
Welcome.
So tell us a little bit about CXO, virtual CXO. That's a little bit of a different concept. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
So as the name implies, it's a virtual CXO service whereby for small and early growth stage companies that are looking to extend and augment their leadership team, they can do so by extending out through the virtual services that we offer, either in a contractual basis or through some of the tools and services that we offer on the site. What I would like to describe as an executive in the box, based on industry-proven, time-tested, proven tools and methodologies, based on 20 years plus of experience.
So now, are you the CXO, or do you have a kind of roster of C-level executives that fill the position?
It's me. It's a one-man show, but I do have relationships outside my core areas of expertise as needed.
And what's your core area of expertise?
It is both strategy and operations, building and growing companies. I've done it a number of times in a number of different industries, from early stage up through $1 billion worth of valuation.
So what compelled you to go this route, to do the virtual thing?
Well, it's something I recognize over time, where there are a lot of, as I mentioned, early growth stage companies that either they don't have the need to bring someone full-time, they may not have all the resources, financial wherewithal, but they ultimately do need expertise to be brought to the table. And so we've packaged it in a what I'll call a fractionalized on-demand model. So if you need us a couple hours a week, couple times a month, we provide that level of flexibility. So again, you don't necessarily need to bring on a CXO, but you can extend into our platform to provide the level of guidance, expertise, operational support, again, tools and services that we have to offer to help you advance and grow your company.
Now, is there a sweet spot in terms of amount of time you work for a given client, or that varies based on their need?
Yeah, it absolutely varies. It could be, 10 hours a month. It could be 3 or 4 days a week, depending upon what their particular needs are.
And then when you're working with the startup, how does that original engagement kind of happen?
Almost all engagements start with an overall assessment, which is basically coming in and at the highest level, trying to understand who they are, what their goals are, and then drilling down a little bit deeper, which is where the devil is, and then ultimately determine, in a very focused manner, what precisely they need to move to that next level. It could be strategic guidance. It could be business development activities. It could be financial modeling, pricing. It could be raising funds. It could be operationally optimizing what they're trying to do.
So what are some of the signs that a company might begin to see that suggest, maybe we ought to have a conversation, at least entertain this idea of having a virtual CXO? What kind of signs should we be looking for?
The most obvious sign is when you know you have the opportunity, you're positioned for substantial growth, but you look around you, even inclusive of your advisory team and your leadership team, and you still recognize there's a void. You may not have the expertise and experience at the table to get there. And the companies I work with the most, honestly, are those that, and many of the folks like William and others that we've worked with over time, are those that are very open-minded. They realize that they don't have the level of expertise at the table, as opposed to thinking that they know everything and they have everything. And that's typically what prevents companies really from growing, is that barrier. And so if they are open-minded and they recognize there's a need, and obviously we can fulfill that need, then that comes together very well.
Now, I think another barrier would be choosing the right advisor. How do you help them vet to make sure it is a good fit?
Yeah, a couple dimensions to that. Probably most importantly, to be honest, I would say the chemistry. There's a lot of bright people, a lot of capable people. If that chemistry isn't there between the people running the company and the outside advisor, then it's hard to even move beyond that. But the secondary level would then be really a core area of expertise. What I like to describe as, industry, time-tested, proven track record of actually, accomplishing some great goals in the business world. And so having that core area of expertise. And I always try to think of it, again, as you frame out what your operational, strategic, and functional needs are, and you find where that void is, and then you try to align skill sets coming in with that particular void, even though they may have the chemistry, but if they're not satisfying a specific need and addressing the void that you have, then that's obviously problematic. So it's making sure there's an actual fit between those two pieces.
So you have a whole stable of people with different skill sets and different personalities to match up? Because it's not just you, it sounds like.
It is primarily me, but I do have business relationships outside myself as we grow, and it's really based on demand. So, for example, if there's a client that has a specific functional need that I can't satisfy, there's a lot of people I know I can easily reach out to them to satisfy that need. What I'm certainly not going to do is to pretend to be everything to everybody. Even though I have a relatively diverse background, there's a lot of things I don't know and still can't do. And so, when that surfaces, I can reach out. As you can imagine, I know hundreds and hundreds of executives with lots of experience, so it's not that difficult for me to reach out to someone else if I can't satisfy a particular need.
So are more and more people with your kind of the experience entertaining this as a career choice as opposed to working at a big firm?
It's a great question. I think it's actually a very insightful question. I think if you look at both the evolution of the marketplace, the economy, you look at kind of the characteristics of the dynamic that exists out there today, which is what you're alluding to, which is that there's, and I see this all the time, hundreds and hundreds, clearly thousands and thousands of very qualified business executives that are sitting there that for a variety of different reasons are looking for something to do that kind of traditional full-time executive role may not be actually the best fit for them anymore. And so rather than sit around and do nothing, the idea of coming in an on-demand, fractionalized manner makes a heck of a lot of sense, really, for all parties, right? Both for the marketplace, the companies that are seeking that fractionalized on-demand experience, as well as those executives that may not want to or have the opportunity to go back into a traditional role. So that's absolutely the case. And the other thing, and I alluded to a few times, and this is where the virtual part comes, and again, I call it executive in the box, is I've begun to build out, and there's a lot more coming, tools and services that are packaged where you can literally download, and they're templates, they're models, they're methodologies, they're frameworks, they're tools that I've seen a lot of companies struggle with. They spend an exorbitant amount of precious time that they have trying to figure out financial modeling, trying to figure out go-to-market strategies, trying to figure out how to perform market assessment. And so I'm packaging these tools and services that are based on best practices across many industries, decades of experience where they can download it and literally accelerate them into the future through this kind of virtual download, a virtual CXO in a box is what I call it.
Now, when you're dealing with the smaller firms that can only afford a fractionalized executive in this manner, part of what they're buying or renting from you, I would think, is access to your Rolodex, right? Like they're trying to build out their company, and their company may not need money per se, but they may need connections. Is that part of your services?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that inherently comes with the model. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And do you have sweet spots that you work in? Like, is your contacts and your ability to open doors? Is it like you mentioned strategy and operations as kind of your core competency? But like, if they needed a door opened at a large company, do you have relationships in large companies to help them?
There's a whole range of relationships. So I've spanned a number of different industries: defense, intelligence, aerospace, biotechnology, the pharmaceutical industry, financial services, investment banking, mobile, internet, telecommunications. And so I've been in a number of different industries, and I've had access to both small, medium, and large-scale global billion-dollar corporations on the advisory board for Cisco and Northrop Grumman and others. And so I certainly have a range of those relationships. But to me, it's oftentimes more than just the relationships. It really comes down to that core area of expertise in terms of what do you need to do to move to that next level. Mm-hmm. Now, you can meet with people all day long, but in the end, you actually have to literally do something,
right?
And kick this thing forward. So,
and the relationship with Thai Atlanta, speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, and you know, I've had the chance to meet with some great entrepreneurs that have some great ideas. You know, I've been particularly impressed both with the level of energy, the ecosystem that exists in and around Atlanta, but more importantly, and most importantly, is really the openness with which these folks are kind of thinking about what they're doing, which is that they're being receptive to programs, accelerators, platforms such as TIE and others that exist, open to advisors and mentors to help guide them along the way. And as I said before, oftentimes that's actually the barrier that prevents success, is they assume that they actually can and can do everything and know everything.
Right.
So we're safe on that front. We know that
exactly.
We don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know anything.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
We could be good potential clients. So I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you. So what's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation with you?
So they can come directly to the website, which is www.thevirtualcxo.com or email don.turner@thevirtualcxo.com.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to leave your microphone open because I want to bring some other people into this conversation. We're going to swing back around because I have some other questions, too, about Atlanta. Next, I think maybe we got our Williams mixed up because it's William Whipple, right? So right. Maybe William Howell will come join us another time.
Right.
But also in the studio with us today is William Whipple. He's president and co-founder, CIO, Grand Poobah, chief bottle washer with Amaro Global Investors. How you doing, man?
Awesome. How are you doing this morning, Mr. Stone?
Doing well. So you are part of this TIE organization as well, but tell us a little bit about your business first.
Absolutely. We're an institutional real estate investment firm, so we actually fit into the financial services arena. I founded the firm back in July of 2009, and you know, it's been quite an experience for us. We brought in the team the first 6 months. We developed the business strategy and brought in a portfolio manager. We brought in a vice president of finance. We recruited an advisory board, actually, that is comprised of some of the top folks in the industry, in the country, and some of the folks outside of the industry as well, because we wanted to diversify our advisory board with professionals both within and outside the industry. And we saw an opportunity when we founded the company to fulfill a void, a niche in the industry. Our focus specifically with this fund that we've launched last year is actually real estate. It's a value-added distress fund that focuses in the Southeast on assisted living, multifamily, and grocery-anchored retail. So we're targeting smaller assets, secondary markets, and the objective of this fund is to deliver an internal rate of return of 15%. Or above to institutional investors around the globe.
So how do you get the word out to the institutional investors that you have this fund?
Great question. The institutional investors that are in this space are folks, for the most part, that we've got relationships with already, because we've been in the space, all of us, for a couple of more decades. So it was seeing that there was a void for this type of strategy and for a manager such as us, where, the objective for us is to deliver risk-adjusted returns for investors that excel in this space. But coincidentally, we're also a minority business enterprise, and there are not that many folks like us that have the relationships with some of the key folks in this space. So it's great to have some people that are really in control of dollars for plan sponsors and some of the consultants that have gotten to know us over the years, the decades, and they know us and they like us and want to see us succeed. So we've built a mousetrap, so to speak. We've built a team, a process, and capability that is quite impressive. And we've got a team that has a track record over a couple of decades of having generated results.
You've mentioned the word void a couple of times. What say more about the void that you're filling. What's missing? What are out there that other that you have that other funds don't have? Or speak more of that.
Absolutely. Well, there's some distress in the marketplace that that is not being focused on. If you look at the institutional investors in this space that focus on real estate, what they have a tendency to do is to get their access to an asset class, what's called the beta exposure. And they've got tens of millions and in some case hundreds of millions of dollars that they're looking to get deployed. And the quickest and the most efficient way for them to get that capital deployed is to go to the big markets, what's called the 24 global financial center markets. D.C., Boston, New York, San Francisco, Miami. So they put that dollar capital to work really quickly. But what they need to do is they need to diversify their portfolios.
Yeah, they should be putting it in growing radio networks, don't you think?
I think
let's get that on the record.
There's an opportunity. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's great. So so we go to the secondary markets, and we go to property types that are a little more exotic, that they typically aren't nearly as exposed to as they need to be in their portfolio to be diversified. So the assisted living the multifamily, as well as the grocery-anchored retail, are actually three property types that many of these pension funds are oftentimes underexposed to. So, for example, take assisted living, for example. This is a sector whose time has come. If you look at the baby boomers, it's sort of like an elephant moving through a python, right? So if you look at that curve, it literally increases exponentially. So this is a great space for us to be in and great timing for us to be in this space. And even though we've got a team that this versed and experienced over more than a couple of decades of executing these types of strategies, because we're a small team, one of the things that we wanted to do was leverage strategic partners. So, for example, and this is one of the things that Dunn has espoused to us as well, but one of the things that we've done is team up with, for example, an assisted living, Solomon Holdings. They're a developer, investor, operator of assisted living in the Southeast, one of the most successful, and they've got an existing platform. So because we're a relatively new platform, that provides us even greater credibility and execution power as well to show that we can scale the platform.
Now, what's your relationship to Ty?
We came in as a participant in the Entrepreneurial Social X Accelerator Program. So Don here, who was just on, and Anita, who will be on next, are two of the mentors that have been very instrumental in helping a number of entrepreneurs like myself.
So you were a mentee?
I am.
And then so you came into the program because you needed help. You felt there were gaps in your advisory team?
Well, not so much the advisory team. One of the key benefits of this accelerator program is that every entrepreneur comes in at a different stage. They've got different business objectives and strategies. And it's really a tailor-made program based on what this business, each business is trying to achieve. And in our case, we're probably farther along than most of the entrepreneurs that I've had some interface with here. And that's because after founding the company back in 2009, we've done several things. We brought in seed capital from family and friends. We started a fund whereby individual investors can invest, and we've still got that fund open. Coincidentally, we are going to close that fund out just shortly in the event that there's some listeners there that are interested in participating in that fund. That fund has a $25,000 minimum investment, and as soon as we bring in our strategic investor, which is the next thing that we're trying to achieve, and this is our next milestone and step for us to really leapfrog to tremendous success. The way that this business works for us is that we manage the fund that I just spoke of, Amaro Real Estate Value Distress Fund, and we've gone through due diligence, for example, with a number of the largest consultants and biggest investors in the country, and this is a $300 million fund that we'll cap this fund at. So what the consultants and those investors would like to see from us before they make their final investments in this fund is that we've got some staying power, that we demonstrate that we've got the financial wherewithal to manage the fund. So what they're looking for is a quote-unquote qualified fund manager. So we meet all those check marks. the one last check mark that they want to see us meet at the stage anyway is that demonstrate that we've got greater operating reserve. So we're looking for this from our strategic investor. We're looking for a $5 million commitment. And we've just restructured that. Some of that was some of the input from our good people here at TIE. That $5 million commitment is actually to be met through two different components. $1 million of that is going to be capital that goes in alongside the limited partners that invest in our real estate fund. The other $4 million may not ever be invested simply because there's two conditions that have to be met before that $4 million is called. One, we literally have to achieve the first close for the real estate fund, which means if we didn't achieve that, that money doesn't have to be funded. Number two, once we achieve the first close, there must be a shortfall in cash flow, which we also don't anticipate. And we've got financial modeling that we've also received some impact and input on, and we've refined that. So that's what we're looking for, a $5 million commitment. Four actually of that is the operating reserve piece, and the million that's left is actually the general partner matching capital. So that's bricks and mortar. And so the way we've structured this is really a low capital, low risk, and a high return potential investment. And then once we get this strategic investor signed on, at that point, we're ready to conduct the first close and bring in our institutional investors to our real estate fund.
Now, being that you got mentored by some pretty sharp people, and they brought to your attention some maybe different ways of going about this than you had initially thought about? Is that part of what they brought to the table?
Absolutely. I got to tell you, I've been most impressed with Don and Anitha as well, who will come on next. The thing that I think any entrepreneur has to do when you start a business and you look to grow a business, no matter what industry you're in, you've got to look around and purvey the market, and you want to have some mentors that you're working with, and an advisory board is key. But Don mentioned this, you've got to have an open mind, and that means you've got to be flexible. No matter what you've achieved thus far, you've got to be willing to learn from the best if you want to be one of the best, and that's literally what we've done. So even though we've got a presentation or a number of presentations that are designed, for example, for different audiences, so we've got a presentation that's designed for the institutional investor audience. We've got a presentation that's designed for our strategic investor, who's typically a smaller institution. And then we've got a presentation that's designed for individual investors that might invest in this fund for seed capital. So what they've assisted us in doing is providing some feedback along a number of areas, and that was to help us sharpen our presentation. So we worked on the actual presentation as well as the not just the content of that, but the delivery of that as well. So we sharpened that, and there's some key aspects that were really, really helpful to us, and because we're in the financial services industry, more specifically real estate, even though, for example, Don and Anitha may not be experts specifically in real estate, they've got
sometimes that's particularly helpful, right? It's helpful that they're not experts in your domain, right?
Well, that is
fresh eyes.
Absolutely, because there's sort of a generic broad brush. Sometimes you gotta step back and look at the forest and to be sure that you don't miss it for
right.
the trees.
So Anitha, is he coachable?
Yeah, very much. Absolutely, he's a delight.
So I want to move to Anitha here in just a second, but before we wrap this segment, let's make sure our listeners know how to reach out, because if somebody wants to write a $5 million check, they need to know how to get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Stone. again, my name is William Whipple, and the company name is Amero, A-M-E-R-O, Global Investors. You can reach us via our website link, amerogi.com, or you can give us a call, 404-995-4651.
Fantastic. And we're going to leave your mic open as well. I want to introduce now, bring into the conversation, Anitha Vadavatha.
You're Vadavatha. Almost there.
He's got to put a little tempo behind that.
Yeah.
And you're a chief strategist with Covello?
Yes, Covello.com.
Covello.com. So tell us about Covello.
Yeah, it's actually, just to correct, it's Covello.co. Covello.co.
Okay.
Yes, basically Covello is a company that I formed along with three other founders, really bright individuals with varied experiences. And then we've been consulting and providing strategy and product development and other kind of services to a lot of clients. And we decided the best approach to actually give the best bang for a client buck is to bring together that collaborative spirit to grow their product or grow their people or grow their company. And that really how the conversation got started. And then so we eventually decided to form a company called Covello, which is basically a take on growth, you know, combining two different languages, ultimately leads to growth. And that's really what we are here for. And our mission primarily is to apply and leverage emerging technologies and creative talents to ultimately generate some sort of economic equity for both the client and also for ourselves, while creating some sort of a social impact and socially viable business models in the process. So that's really what we do. We provide services to corporations, to startups and nonprofits. We are pretty agnostic industry-wise. That anything that can help move the needle within those organizations and clients on product, people, culture, process, and bottom line, of course. So, and we have, you know, to Don's similar model, I would say, we have access to a lot of amazing collective talent that we bring in on board based on clients' requirement and need. But ultimately, our growth is to take a very disruptive and innovative approach to creating that growth. So we offer services like hackathons, startup weekends, we do business design.
You organize all those kinds of things.
Everything, everything. So that our goal is to kind of really how do we help a client move forward into the future while kind of also keeping in spotlight that, hey, we also need to help them currently. So that's where the whole approach to growth is really key in this context.
So now, can you walk us through an engagement you've had with a client?
Yeah, I mean, for example, we're right now working with a nonprofit organization called Ron Clark Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's an amazing school, and I know anyone who's lived in Atlanta long enough knows them really well. So we started talking to them, and they wanted to re-enter, I would say, for lack of a better term, to the current age.
Right.
Because anyone who's gone into their school premises would know that, oh, it's an amazing energy, very creative, very out of the box, and very new curriculum that they apply to groom almost the next generation of leaders who are only middle school kids. But again, you know, with the times from an infrastructure standpoint and your operation standpoint, you're so focused on the front end that sometimes you kind of, you know, lag behind. So we're kind of helping them with, you know, recreating that image, both on the digital presence and slightly on the offline presence. So we are already kind of started working with them, and we are also have a few other clients that we are talking to currently, which will be pretty closely, you know, would be a close deal for us, where we would be bringing some of that collaborative space model. That's also something we organize for a client, is how do we create a physical and also a virtual collaborative space to generate new ideas and to kind of generate new solutions that can be reapplied back into the company and engage a collective employee team in the process.
Now, it seems like your model ties in extremely well with this new world that we have where employees could be anywhere in the world, and then it's hard to wrangle them, you know,
yes,
where they're in different time zones, and it can be a challenge to create and foster that sense of community that we're all in this together, and especially, and kind of in your world too, Don, if you don't mind dragging you into this a little bit, where you have a fractional relationship with people. They're not all into this one project. They might be all in 20 projects or 10 projects. So they have that's another challenge, you know, to be top of mind, you know, and always be thinking about their client, even though they may be only working with them 3 days a month. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I compare it to I've seen kind of the traditional business model organization company flounder. In comparison to a highly distributed organization, mm-hmm. that they were matrixed in nature, they were global in nature, they were virtualized, and they were fractionalized. Yet it was that kind of platform, that commonality of interest. It was the energy, it was the spirit, it was the mechanics behind making that all work that made that team incredibly more successful than the traditional business right. model. So there's no doubt that it can work. It's just a matter of what I would describe the industry catching up
yes,
and evolving into kind of the future way of operating. There's no doubt that this is the trend that's going to unfold
right, you can't
in
ignore
the future.
It, right?
Cannot
there's
ignore
I mean, especially when you have an unemployment rate that's as high as ours, and right. then you see there's a bunch of people, a bunch of displaced executives, there's a ton of brain power out there
awesome.
Just waiting mm-hmm. For the right opportunity, and they're never going to see an opportunity like they had previously. The odds of them getting these you know, high six-figure annual incomes from one person, yeah. that's going to be less and less as right. time goes by, right? So they're going to have to kind of find their own way and make their own.
I think that's where, you know, the emphasis for us is on collaboration, because really at the end of the day, I mean, I know everyone sitting at the table here are very familiar with that we are already in that world where, you know, you compete in one space, but with the same person or same entity, you collaborate on the other side.
Right.
So everyone shares this dual kind of, you know, natural relationships, whether you're a corporation or an individual. So I think it's a good approach to constantly keep in mind is if you can partner and empower both of yourselves, why not? And because that way, you know, for us, we always think from a client perspective. So if I'm thinking from a client perspective, our ultimate goal is to give the best for the client.
Right.
So if you can bring their collective energies to do that, you know, we're not compromising the quality, which is really important. So that's why we're able to apply best talent, you know, best technologies, best everything to help the client, again, move forward.
Right, but it's also on an on-demand basis.
Correct.
And that's kind of a pivot in the way that they've seen the world. And I think that we're going through this transition right now where there was an old paradigm of I'm going to work for many years in one location and that's my security, quote unquote, because I have this job, quote unquote, and now you're trading one boss for lots of bosses, but in essence you're getting more security because all your eggs aren't in one basket.
It's absolutely. I mean, so if you look at the traditional models, and I think we've all seen this, we just may not have thought there's another way because we're kind of trapped in a traditional box. You look at traditional organizations and we'll just simply take a single executive. I mean, that's a single mind, a single person. And with all due respect, if you look at their overall efficiency and effectiveness on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot of wasted cycles there on a single individual, right? And so you're tied. There's a cost of managing that single individual. There's an inherent risk. Mm-hmm. It's like the risk in the financial markets, right? I mean, it's diversification reduces risk, right? So if you have a single executive that is largely inefficient with respect to the time and you only have a single mind that you can tap into. If you contrast that to, say, a pool of resources where there's a collective intellect that far exceeds that executive, there's a greater level of efficiency because you can immediately tap into a core area of expertise that you can't. And I've worked with some of the greatest minds in the industry. I'm blessed to have worked with tremendous minds, yet even those folks had limitations. And even those folks had to reach out to consulting organizations, out to research material. They had to go out beyond themselves to find a core of expertise. So really, we're talking about the same thing. It's
absolutely
an extension into a virtual world of a collective intellect and experience pool that is highly efficient and effective in nature that you draw from and into to define and to grow your business.
Now, Anitha, is something that you do is you become the quarterback of this virtual team, that you're the one that's kind of cobbling together these best-in-class performers to help the organization?
I mean, of course, you know, I've been a strategy consultant for a long time and then working in both industry as well as consulting firms before and then doing some consulting independently. Of course, that's like my natural forte, if you can call it. You know, of course, I'm part of the founding team. So our goal is really what role you play, really more than the titles. We really don't believe in the whole title because today I can be the strategist on that project, on that particular client, but I can bring a completely different expertise with another client. So even within our team, we see where we fit.
It's very fluid.
It's very fluid because that's ultimately the goal is we need to have the best solution for the client, whether we're developing a product, which we also do a lot of product development, or we're kind of helping with a collab space because the you know, I think the best part of our Covelo team is we're all very diverse. We're all multidisciplinarians. You know, we've done operations to strategy to like a bunch of different things. So which is really the strength, I would call it, to where we can be very effective for a client. And I feel the best part of being a multidisciplinarian is the perspective that you have is more unique, which is very hard to find normally. You know, there's of course merit and a lot of credibility to deep individual experience, individual area, but someone who's exposed to a lot of different things, question differently, look at the problem differently, you solve the problem differently too. So in that sense, we do bring in that.
Great, great points there, Anita. I got to tell you, just to highlight a couple of things that you and Dan just mentioned, I think it's really important just to reiterate how key it is to be creative and looking at what you bring to the table in terms of a core competence and a competitive advantage, and to assess more creatively how you can leverage that and then bring another strategic partner to the table and give them something that they didn't have. So being able to identify how you can meet another organization's needs so that they're going to be more productive, they're going to be more profitable, they're going to appreciate that when you bring that to the table. But first, you have to understand and appreciate what your own limitations are as well as those strengths, and then go out and assemble through your strategy you know, the expertise in your model that allows you to build the most effective program that you can. So, you know, one of the approaches that we take is that we look at where we need to build competitive advantage in every aspect of our business to be successful. And then we find components along each of those lines where we need to be extraordinary. And that takes us beyond what our competitors are typically going to be doing. So that gives us a competitive edge. So, for example, we've got a sustainability program. We've been able to enhance that through some of the feedback here. So how do we build competitive advantage there? Again, for example, to be extraordinary, we look at some of the top folks in the industry. So there is at the Georgia Institute of Technology, for example, Gottfried Augenbrau runs through the architecture program there, a sustainability benchmarking program. We're able to participate in that program and use some of those PhD students to look at our properties and do audits and benchmark just where they are and use some of the leading edge practices and approaches to build those sustainability features in. And that enables us as well to be quite cost effective in how we do that. We brought in another gentleman who actually runs our sustainability council. His name is Bill Horton. He used to work for Steve Case from AOL. He's one of the top sustainability experts in America. So he's formerly chairman of our sustainability council and runs our sustainability program. And that is really a tremendous asset to our program and gives us much greater credibility as well as effectiveness in what we do. And I spoke earlier about our strategic partner and assisted living. So, you know, assisted living is a great space to be in. But you know, when you're a relatively new entrant to the space and you can team up with someone who has an established platform, I mean, they've invested or operated over $1 billion across the Southeast in assisted living. So that just goes to demonstrate that in terms of execution, there's no question as whether or not we can execute and deliver between them and our existing team who's done similar strategies and execution over a couple of decades.
Now, Anita, Don, you filled role of mentor in this process, but I get the sense that you two learn an awful lot when you're doing this as well. Is that accurate?
Oh, you're right on dot, Stone. You know, that's why I think when you say mentor again, you know, I like that it's a two-way street. It's not a one-way street because the kind of quality of, you know, clearly, you know, William is an example sitting here. It's, you know, these are accomplished individuals trying to create a new enterprise and, you know, take a new idea forward. So it's as much learning, I think, definitely for me, and I know Don would agree with me on that, as they're getting out of it. So again, goes back to my mantra, which has become these days, is that collaboration is like they bring their expertise that we're learning from to some degree, but we're also providing our expertise to help their businesses grow. And so, yeah, it's a very rich mentoring experience in that sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. My wife often will ask, you know, how was the session? I was like, it's very fulfilling. And I sincerely mean that, both in terms of hearing what's coming out of the mouths of other mentors, but also the folks that go into the program. I mean, I have to give William a tremendous amount of credit. He's obviously incredibly intelligent, accomplished, articulate. I've seen his advisory board, his overall board, and I can tell you can't buy these type of people, right? And so they're on board because they believe in him and in the model. And so that's an example of where you'd look at William and say, why is he there? He's there the same reason we've all been there before, which is to say we don't know everything, right? And so there's always an opportunity for someone to add some piece. And it's about the piece. It's not necessarily about everything you know. It's everything you don't know, and it's that piece that you're missing that you need to bring to the table. But, yeah, I just have – I get a lot out of the program because it's, again, just feeding off the energy and the enthusiasm of trying to build something and just hearing – people's experiences. That's how we all learn, right? It's experientially. It's you know, hitting your head against the wall. Well, that really hurt. Let's not do that again, right? I mean,
yes.
Those are some of the most beneficial lessons, right? And so hearing what people have been through, and I'll put in my 2 cents, and Ethan and others will put in their 2 cents, and collectively it's like, wow, it really paints a beautiful picture that, you know, independently I wouldn't have painted it the same way, and nor would Anita, but collectively we paint this amazing mural of strategy and kind of thought process.
Correct.
That can only be done in a teaming environment.
Now, this program is called, I believe it's called Social X. Is that the platform that
yes.
Thai Atlanta is offering? And can you walk us through, like, say, or one of our listeners has a business, and as William demonstrates, you don't have to be a 20-year-old startup person with a napkin. This can be an ongoing existing business that, you know, you have a lot of experience. So how does that person learn about this and get on board and participate?
You want to take that?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you begin by reaching out to Thai Atlanta itself. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Thai Atlanta website, they do a great job of outlining the different programs there, one of which is the Social X program. So that mm-hmm. would be the most simplest way to get connected.
Is it cost money? Like, do you know any of the nuts and bolts about how to get this thing going?
It actually doesn't cost money. I know, you know, definitely William can, uh-huh. you know, having been through the process, could also allude to that. But primarily, it's like you apply, you know.
You just apply. You have to be accepted into the program.
Exactly. Because the goal always is to kind of keep it as close-knit, few, so you get more personal attention.
Right.
Because you do meet more regularly. It's not like it's a one-time session and then you're done.
Right.
So it's over a period of time. So that way, and we can also kind of ensure that there are a good mix of different ideas. So that way, it's not just learning only from the mentors, but also learning from your co-entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they have
so
a different
you meet
problem.
In as a group. It's not one-on-one. It's not
It's a combination of both. Uh-huh. So there are some sessions where you do meet as a group, so everyone learns from each other. But then each entrepreneur also gets an opportunity to sit with each mentor and then go through the process.
It's funny. One of the behaviors I've observed almost invariably is when it's one of those meetings where it's kind of loosely defined and there's an option. Do we break up independently or kind of stay together? 100% of the time, the vote is always to stay together.
Stay together.
It's because the entrepreneurs, and they'll literally say this, no, I want to hear what William has to say. I want to hear what he's talking about and doing. And William, the same thing. And so the tendency is to always just stay together and just listen to what everyone's saying.
Now, walk us through what one of those groups looks like. Like, who facilitates?
So Katie Elizabeth, she's the one who manages Thai overall for Atlanta chapter. So she's always present, or someone from the organization is always present. Mm-hmm. So they kind of facilitate, you know, there's a physical space that everyone meets at once a week.
And
or whatever
how many
the
people are there? Like how many mentors, how many business people?
I think it depends on the mentor's availability, but there are a set of mentors assigned to each cohort, if you can call it, a team of individuals going through that particular process. And based on the mentor's availability, there could be one time, two, there could be everyone, present.
Right.
So that way, you know, that's how, you know, Dawn and I, you know, we both were present for that one session where, that's fantastic. Because also for me, I learned so much from Dawn. I mean, clearly, he's such an accomplished executive. So even mentors can learn from each other. So it's like I can't say enough.
Fantastic. I love the idea.
The energy and the cross-pollination that happens during the sessions.
Now, the facilitator will pose a question or a challenge, or they will ask the business owner what challenges are you working on?
So, you know, there's a lot of appreciation for keeping it flexible and nimble and to just kind of let it self-evolve, if you will.
Right.
But by the same token, they try to create some level of boundary around it. So typically what happens is we'll go around the table and the individual business will have, say, 10 minutes. Just effectively present either through a presentation or just simply verbally describe their business, get up on the whiteboard, however they want to do it, you know, jump up and dance, whatever. But effectively articulate who they are, what they're doing, what some of their pain points are, And then we'll spend a few minutes kind of going back and forth around that. And we'll either just – and often we'll take a vote. Do we want to go around the table and keep going, or do we want to interact with William and his business model for a bit? And then, you know, whatever consensus vote determines the outcome, then that's the direction we go. So I've seen it both where we spend, you know, an hour going back and forth on one single business. And I've seen it where we just kind of round robin around the table four or five times. It's like four rounds of going through every single company. We're literally playing off of one another.
Right. Yeah. And also there's also some sort of curriculum as well that's involved. So it's not just, you know, there's a lot of deep conversation, targeted conversation, you know, based on what challenges the entrepreneurs want help with. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, we also walk them through and teach new tools and techniques and the process, like, you know, lean startup methodologies to, you know, business model canvassing, which they can actually use that as frameworks to actually build that business. So there's a little bit of the structured curriculum approach.
Is there
approach.
A homework for the business owner, like prior to getting to this first meeting? Are they told, look, I need you to be ready to present these kind of things, or is it just a free for all?
I'll let William answer that.
You know, we in our case, we had a number of presentations. We had our business strategy all laid out. But, you know, in some of the other cases.
You thought you had your business strategy.
Well, exactly. I mean, we arrived to present what we had and then open minds to just to refine and to sharpen what we did. But then, you know, recalling some of the co-entrepreneurs, some of the folks showed up and didn't have really anything on paper just yet but an idea. So there are really different levels and different stages that each entrepreneur is at. And, you know, we've got experienced mentors here that can jump in at whatever stage the entrepreneurs are at to help them grow and develop the business.
And then the relationship is strictly mentoring, like the mentors don't get any equity in the company or they don't get paid by the company. This is just a truly altruistic premise.
We don't? I thought we did.
We need to have a chat offline. Yeah, that is true. It's again, I think that's the strength of Thai as an organization, right? So there are a lot of accomplished individuals, both in terms of their expertise and also, you know, like Don, highly successful in creating several businesses and scaling it. So it is a time when, you know, sometimes you actually want to help someone. It's like, you know, they always talk that in Silicon Valley you have this paid forward thing. So essentially that's what we also believe truly is like, how do you pay it forward without any expectations? And of course, you know, if the entrepreneurs want to give us equity, absolutely we'll take
it. Open to that.
I've never said no.
No.
And as a matter of fact, we've left some flexibility so that we can provide a couple of points to folks that are really instrumental in helping us with our strategy and bring in additional capital, because we believe those folks that help us, you really have to do what you can to show your appreciation as well. And certainly these folks have been very instrumental. Strategy, help to look at our product more carefully, the target market, and how do you assess that.
Did anybody fork over any cash?
Well, not just yet, but certainly
because
that's the right group of people you want to know. If you're raising $5 million bucks, I want the Thai Atlanta people to know it.
But
directing, the thing is, there are a number of members in Thai that have access or that manage
capital. They have that
capital
in their hip pocket, will you?
Well, some have that as well. Some have that as well. So we've got the opportunity and access to some of those people, and certainly we've been able to sharpen and refine our model and our presentation to achieve that. So, but also we've got a letter of intent at this stage for the strategic investor that we haven't closed yet.
Great.
So until the money's in the bank, you really don't, you know, you don't count that. But but that strategic investor comes in and gets 20% to 30% of our management company, and that's a perpetual position in everything we do going forward. And it's a fairly profitable business model because it's the typical private equity model here, where, you know, once you execute and deliver the promised return, which in our case we had a 9% preferred for the real estate fund, we get to keep 20% of the profits above that. So it's a very profitable business model, and our strategic investor will do quite handsomely, we think, with this investment.
Do you see yourself playing a mentor role going forward with this organization?
Funny you mention that, because I've actually offered that to a couple of our mentors here. And you know, I've been personally able over the years to do some mentoring in some, you know, some impoverished areas to some kids that otherwise wouldn't have the opportunities. For example, in Atlanta, through a couple of nonprofits. So, our belief through our social program, we have a very focused, socially conscious aspect even to our strategy here, which I didn't really elaborate on earlier. But we're believers in that, you know, everything we do is to not just make money for our investors as well as ourselves, but to make a difference and improve the planet. So we want to change lives. We want to improve communities. We want to enhance education. So we've committed that a significant portion of our profits from the start will go right back into these communities where investors live and where they serve to accomplish just these things. So we're excited about that, and that means we're giving back already, and certainly to the extent that we can work on and some of the organizations like Don's and Anita's to help them do some additional mentoring, we're happy to do that as well.
Now, does the program need more business people, mentees, or does it need more social entrepreneur-minded mentors?
I guess there's always room for both, I would say. Again, you know, going with the philosophy is there's never enough. Mm-hmm. Because, again, you know, we also have to keep in mind that schedules and those things always kind of play into role.
Right.
So if we always want to have access to more, so that way when the entrepreneur needs or the mentor, we should be able to effectively match the right to individuals, so both benefit in the process.
Right.
So we are certainly open to kind of always have that reserve.
And a socially minded mentor can go online and find out information about how to be part of the
Absolutely.
Social X.
Yeah. Tie Atlanta website.
And the best part is this is one of the programs that Tie Atlanta offer. There are several programs. There's actually one also focused on educating high school kids on this entire process.
Right, we had them on
we had some of those last time. Man, that was a lot of fun. Some really bright kids.
Yeah, that's great.
So again, we always need mentors for that. So once you become part of the mentoring ecosystem of Thai, then you could easily kind of
bounce around to all the others. Now, does this application process happen like annually, or is this happening throughout the year? Like, is there certain times when you have to get in and apply and get started, or is this just happening on a rolling basis?
You have to rush in September like college.
I'm not quite clear, but I'm sure those details are on the website.
Yeah, I'm sure they would accept an application at any point in time. At any point. Especially if there's a particular need or there's a mentor who's really
willing
to help.
Right, so then you
could
just jump into the next facilitated meeting, and then you just kind of join the club at that point, and then you get involved.
Yeah, there's a natural and ultimately, honestly, a required vetting process that should take place, to Anita's point, to make sure that we really do have the right people at the table, both in terms of those companies that require some guidance and they're ultimately focused on something that maps into particular program that we're particularly talking about, as well as that you actually have a track record behind you of having accomplished something. So,
and then how long do you stay in the mentoring program? How long have you been in it, Will?
Gosh, several months actually, and we met literally once a week, and we oftentimes went over because our mentors here were very generous with their time and. It's been absolutely phenomenal. I can't tell you enough about the program. It's been
so. From your perspective, this was a good use of your time. And then, do you feel that you were
tremendously
that without their help, that you think that the company might have gone in a different direction?
That's a great question. I wouldn't say a different direction so much for us, because we were farther along in terms of having developed our business strategy. Some others, I could see the feedback right off where. You know, Don and Anita's input to them took them in totally different directions than where they would have ended up, because you're looking at folks here that have tremendous experience across multiple sectors of the market. In our case, we were farther down the road and having gotten input as well from consultants in our industry, investors that are ultimately going to be our clients as well. So for us, it was more of a refinement of what we're doing. And it's been very, very beneficial for us just to sharpen that, because I tell you, we've got tremendous feedback on content and along
every, and just every the validation is probably worthwhile, right?
Well, the validation, we've got a financial model. A big part of what we do when looking at investments is we financially model just about everything. So to be sure, we've dumbed that down and simplified that in a format that investors can look at and quickly ascertain, okay, what do I invest? What do I get for that as a risk-adjusted return on my investment? How do we address the target markets, and how do we assess what those markets are, who are our competitors? And just the delivery as well. So a big part of the feedback that I got personally was on actual delivery, because it's easy to sit down and you know, you've got a presentation that might be 20 pages long. And if it's anything longer than 10 pages, it's way too long. And even those pages, you need maybe, no more than, 3, 4, or 5 bullet points per page. So we were able to be much more concise, shorter, sweeter, sharper, and we just refined everything across the board. So, and keep in mind, this was after having gotten input from some of our advisory board members and some other folks that, you've got such talented and experienced folks here with folks like Don and Anita that has been invaluable for us. So we're definitely better, much better at what we're doing, no question, and we're off to tremendous success. We've already received more positive feedback from some of the folks that we've incorporated some of those changes into our presentation and investor documents and materials. So things are going quite well.
Yeah, I was going to say, it really is the value proposition is largely oriented around that whole vetting process, messaging, hearing it from an outside perspective. And it's funny, I always try to read body language, and so we'll go around the table and someone will kind of describe their business model, and I'll look around and Anita will be sitting there and the head kind of shaking, and I'll see a frown. You can tell there's like, what is this person talking about? And so you kind of see that there's some real kind of reaction to what that person is saying. Right. And it's like, we've all done it. I've done it. When you're so heads down into something, it all makes total sense to you.
Right. Right.
But when you play it back to someone, they're like, what are you saying? And right. You're thinking, can't you read English? I mean, it makes total sense right. to me. What's well, confusing? And yet it really is confusing.
You've thought it through from one perspective, and then you've made tangent and pivots that all made sense at the time off of your basic thesis, and then you're kind of fast-forwarding the person you're telling the end of the story, and they're like, I don't
know. And ultimately, you're not selling to yourself, right? You're not building something for yourself. You're building it for an outside audience, and so that's where you have to get the perspective from.
So now, if somebody wanted to get involved, do you guys know the Thai Atlanta website, SocialX platform?
I think if you want to go to Thai Atlanta website, then just the information is right there. Or you can contact Katie Elizabeth. Uh-huh. Her information is also on the site, and you'll pretty much see for each of the programs who's the contact person. You can directly email them.
Right, and then there's an application that you can just submit and then get accepted or not into the program.
Yeah. Or you can reach out to that individual, and then they can walk you through the entire process and answer all your questions.
Right. All right. Well,
One more point here, William Whipple, Amerill Global Investors. One of the differentiating aspects that's unique for us is the opportunity for smaller or individual investors to get involved in our institutional platform. So that is something I probably should have mentioned. So if someone's out there interested, in addition to the strategic investor opportunity that might or might not get all the way to the finish line here, but we hope that it will. With our existing letter of intent, you can feel free to give us a call, 404-995-4651, or go to our website at amerogi.com.
And I want to make sure we get Anita's coordinates as well for Covello.co.
Yes, so my contact email would be Anita, A-N-I-T-H-A, @covello.co. And my number is going to be 678-596-5573. Or you can visit our website, www.covello.co.
And Don, you want to give yours one last time?
Sure. The website is www.thevirtualcxo, all one word, .com. And my email is don.turner@thevirtualcxo.com.
Great. Well, thanks to all of our guests, and thanks to Thai Atlanta for putting together another great episode. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.